Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Amity.
And I'm Laura. Let's get started. This book, All of a Kind Family, is one of my favorites, like hands down. My mom is here and she asked me last night if I liked it as an adult. I said, oh yeah.
It's oh my gosh.
Amazing. Yeah.
I think the only issue I have with it is that I read about their family and especially their mom. And I'm like, I have such a long way to go. She's so wonderful. Like, she is human. She's not like perfect, but she's so good.
She's so like even keeled and like nothing gets to her. And she's just like, eh. Especially
yeah.
Like I was very, I don't know. I'm just super impressed with her. She's so organized. She's so like, she has so much she has to get done. And did you notice that they always talked about mama's house, like mama's girls and mama's house and
mama's family, mama's yeah. backyard. Yes. All of that, that really stuck out to me as I was reading this section.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I just think that's so funny because, you know, Sydney Taylor, as she's looking back on her life, that's how she remembers thinking about things. This is mama's. This is mama's domain. Mm-hmm. We are mama's. And Papa was a very present and wonderful father and parental figure and everything, but mama was in charge.
He was busy.
Yeah, and he was busy and he wasn't there very much. When he was there, he was very engaged and very loving and took good care of his family, you know, as good of care as he could. It's a hard time. She was the lady for sure.
Which I think anyway. Is like how, I don't know, that's how most homes are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mom like pulls it all together. I was talking to a lady at a dental office the other day and she's like, us women have so many responsibilities and so many things we have to think about, and you know, nobody else cares what's for dinner tonight, but I have to think about it every night.
Yeah, and I was listening to a lady also who was like, we are expected to do it all, and that's not okay, because yes, like feminism accomplished some good things, but it's accomplished some not good things for women, because now it's like you have to do everything or else you're not enough, and that's not fair and it's not okay. Because we have to take on all the traditional roles as well as all these new roles. And if we don't, then people assume that we're lazy or slacking in some way. It's very difficult. It's extremely difficult to be a woman.
Yeah. Did feminism just add to our list of stuff?
I think absolutely it did.
Well, I'm excited to talk about it. So you have the first chapter.
This one's so cute. So chapter 8 is called Sarah in Trouble. And this is, again, another one that I'm like, oh, feel called out a little bit. It's lunchtime. The girls come home for lunch from school and Mama, she prepares like quite the meals for them. You know, she's like, well, they've been at school all morning. So she has like this full course meal. So Henny walks in first and she doesn't want to wash her hands. She's like, look, my hands aren't very dirty. Mama's like, okay, well, you don't get dinner unless you wash your hands. So she washes her hands and then they sit down to eat. And she always starts off the meal with a rice soup, which sounds very, I mean, she's got rice and meat and vegetables in there. It sounds very good. And it says everybody's used to it because that's what she always serves. It's like the first course is a soup, often this rice soup. There's a strict rule about not wasting any food in mama's house, as we talked about. No soup, no meat, no meat, no vegetables, no vegetables, no fruit. No fruit, no penny. And I think that's really funny and cute. It's, first of all, fruit is kind of, it's the meal ender. It's the sweet at the end of the meal. It's kind of the dessert. And then if they eat all their food, then they get a penny, their little allowance for the day. But Sarah is sitting there at the table and she will not eat her rice soup for anything. And so everybody else finishes their rice soup and then Mama serves the vegetables and meat, but Sarah doesn't get any. And she's like, well, can I have some? Mama says, well, you didn't eat your soup. Sarah says, well, I don't want soup. And Mama's like, oh, well, you know, just say anything. She just keeps eating. Sarah says, well, I just don't feel like eating soup today. Can't I have my meat? And Mama's like, well, of course you can have your meat. You have to eat your soup first. And I've had conversations exactly like this, but I don't know that I'm like as firm as Mama, because she does not give in at all. Like Sarah is like, I don't want it. I don't want it. Ultimately, it ends up that Sarah goes back to school without eating. anything because she won't eat her soup. And mom was like, well, I'm sorry. Because I think that's where I'd be like, well, you could have just a small snack to take with you or something. So I don't want you to starve. Mom was like, no, you know the rule. So if you don't want to eat it, you're not going to eat.
But this is where I thought it was going to end.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
No.
The girls get home from school and mama always makes these. I mean, I'm just like, who is this lady? She's just next level. She always has the rolls and like fresh homemade rolls and butter for the girls when they get home from school. And so, of course, I mean, it just smells amazing. Sarah wants one. She's like, Sarah, if you're hungry, that soup will be ready for you in just a few minutes. And Sarah, it's so funny because she wants to give in. She wants to be like, okay, but she's like too far down the hole at this point. She can't, she's got to be stubborn. So she's like, no, you know, never mind. What I think is interesting too, is it talks about how mama also is struggling. Like it's hard for her to see her daughter struggle and she knows she's hungry and she kind of just wants to give her a roll. But she's like, you know, if I give in this time, then we're always going to have trouble with the girls and with eating their food. It still doesn't end though, because dinner time comes around and everybody is starting with their first course. And what's in front of Sarah? But her bowl of rice soup, which by this time it's getting kind of gross. It's all sort of like, sounds like it's sort of like congealed. It's like gathered at the bottom or something. But by this time, Sarah is so hungry that she finally is like, all right, I will eat it. She takes like a bite or two. And really, that was the entire principle. Mama just wanted her to show that she was willing to try it. That was the thing. So as soon as Sarah tries it, Mama whisks it away and gives her the fresh, you know, delicious dinner.
Yeah,
so,
she kept saying in the beginning, like, Mama was like, if she would just take a couple bites, yeah, that'd be fine.
Yeah, she just needs to try it. Yeah. Well, and then something I left out is that earlier, I think Papa had been there for lunch too, and he kind of like looked at Mama like can she just, you know, let it go this one time? And Mama had to be like, no. You know, it was really hard. It's hard when the other parent is, he wasn't against her and he wasn't like telling her that she shouldn't stick with it, but he's a dad and he sees this little girl and he was like, oh, you know, can't we give her some? So anyway, I thought that was a really good chapter.
So the funny thing is the day I read that, which was earlier in this week, I was dealing with the exact same thing with Presley.
Oh my gosh.
Like, exactly. So she'd been sick, which she's like our one that is, when she's sick, she's very, very, very cranky and just difficult. We've had all the kids. Like we have one kid that is pretty awful all the time. But then when she was sick, she was like the most pleasant, wonderful, happy, thankful child. And we're always like, can she please get sick again? Wonderful when she was sick.
Those Presley, 2 times a year are the
best.
Yes,
Presley's the opposite. She had wanted Noodles and Company macaroni and cheese, and she never eats very much of it. And so I was picking Audrey up from school, and so I thought, I'll just run to Noodles and Company, because it's like, for a side of mac and cheese, it's like $2 or $3. And
yeah.
Anyways, so I got Audrey something, and then I just added like a side of mac and cheese to Presley's food. We get home and she comes out into the office. I was out here getting ready for work. And she's like, why didn't you get me a big one? And I was like, because you don't ever eat it and you're sick and you don't feel good and you're not going to eat it. You know, and she usually leaves it out and then it just goes bad. And I just, it's a waste of money. And so she cried about it for probably an hour and just kept saying, it doesn't taste as good. And I kept saying, it tastes the same as a big one. And I even told her, I'm like, if you eat the small one, maybe I'll go back and get you a bigger one. Like, show me that you're, she wouldn't try it. She was crying. She kept coming out here. And like, so eventually she cried for about an hour. And then finally, and Charlie, even he tries to go in and like talk to her and you couldn't even reason with her. And then eventually she goes, I'm sorry, mommy. And it does taste the same as the big one.
Oh my gosh. That's right.
I hate it. And she didn't even finish it. So, who was right?
Oh, snap. Well, mama's usually right. So that's just how it is.
I just thought it was hilarious that I'm reading this chapter and going through the exact same thing with Presley. And then, did your parents make you eat your food?
Yes. Oh. And I have like mixed emotions about this because now I like mama's approach of like, you have to at least try it. I 100% agree with that. I don't 100% agree with the concept of you have to eat everything that's on your plate. Like you don't leave the table until it's all gone. Because I think that that is exactly what contributes to like an unhealthy relationship with food, because you're not tuning into like, am I full? Am I satisfied? You're just like, I have to eat everything that's on the plate. It doesn't matter how I feel afterwards. But that's how it was. It was like, you have to eat everything that's on your plate.
That's how it is like with us. We're just like with Presley, I'm like, I just want you to try it. Yeah. Just take a couple of bites. Like, and she is difficult. Her eating is obviously.
Well, and what do they say? Like a kid will start to like something if they try it at least 15 times. And so that's why I'm like, they have to at least try it. And then they're eventually going to get a taste for it and then they'll eat it. And that's fine. But I'm not going to force them, because if they're forced, they're not going to like it either way.
Yeah.
You know?
Food is such a hard thing because you just don't know what you're creating, what problems you're creating in your kids by your rules. So chapter 9, I loved this chapter. This brings back the idea of COVID. Yes.
Because this is such a thing that they dealt with a lot, is people actually did get quarantined in a much more intense way than we ever did. But
yes. Did it seem though like the dad could leave?
Yeah, I think so. Because he like went to the store and stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think once you get scarlet fever, you never get it again. And so maybe he'd already had it and maybe mama had to. And so she like technically could leave, but she just, you know, wasn't going to.
So yeah, this chapter is called Mama Has Her Hands Full. And it's just so sweet. So Sarah wakes up and she doesn't feel well. And usually when the girls are sick, mama makes them a sick bed. This is so cute. On the couch in the kitchen. Such a cute little picture in my mind, right? And so she puts sheets on the bed and she keeps the child close to her while she's working. And Henny is jealous and wishes she could stay home from school too, but she's going to send all the other kids to school. Sometimes I feel this way in my house. Like if somebody's sick, I'm like, can I just get it so I can like stay home and lay in bed for a couple of days? But I never get sick enough for that. So I'm never that lucky. But Mama tells them that on the way to school, they need to stop and tell Papa to call the doctor, which is interesting. Like, I don't know. Well, maybe he has to go to the doctor.
Probably.
Walk over and say, hey, we need you to come into the house. The whole problem with this timing is that they're in the middle of preparing for Passover. I liked her little description of what Passover is. So, I mean, I think most people know, but just in case you don't. Thousands of years ago, when the Jewish people lived in Egypt, they were slaves to the Egyptians. Because the Egyptians treated the Jews so cruelly, God punished them in many ways. But the most terrible punishment of all was the angel of death. This angel stopped only in the houses of the Egyptians, killing their firstborn sons. He passed over the Jewish houses, and it was this passing over which gave the holiday its name, hence the name Passover. Passover lasts 8 days, and during those 8 days, no bread or leavened foods can be eaten. To me, this is so interesting too. The Jewish people have to clean their houses like super thoroughly to get rid of any of the leaven. They have certain Passover dishes that they have to use. It said that the house looked like a store because they have so many sets of dishes that they have to deal with. Can you even imagine trying to
like keep that all straight?
Yes.
Well, it made me think of, what's the other book? We'll probably talk about it at the end, but The Housemaid, is that?
The Hired Girl?
The Hired Girl. Yes. Because she's a quote unquote Gentile who comes into this Jewish home. And it is very confusing because there's also like a separate sink for washing different dishes and different dishes for different foods. And I guess if you grow up with it, you understand it probably better.
Yeah, it says even the pots, pans, and dishes have to be changed. Every religious Jewish household has so much kitchenware that it looks like a store. Family must have two sets of dishes for everyday use, one for dairy products and the other for all meat foods, as well as two sets for Passover, to say nothing of the special dishes for company use. I'm going to go crazy. And here we are in this day, like trying to simplify everything. So I wonder if it's the same for Jewish people now.
Like, I would imagine. Yeah, I would sure think so.
That's interesting. The doctor comes and he decides that Sarah has scarlet fever, which means that they have to quarantine and they have to have special diet, which means that they have to eat leaven, even though it's Passover. So they never talk about how they deal with that, but it's just an issue. And then after he examines all the children, then he announces that Ella is sick too, which makes sense because they share a bed, and that they're going to have to put a sign on the door and quarantine. I love that the other girls are excited that there's going to be a sign on the door. And that they're going to be important because now they they're going to get attention for being quarantined, but kids are hilarious because they don't understand. Yeah.
They don't take it super seriously. They're just like, well, this is an adventure.
So Mama moves the girls into her room and has Papa sleep somewhere else. And she's going to try to keep the other kids away from them. She sleeps in their room with them in case they need her. And so that first night, Sarah wakes up with a nightmare. Ella says she must be delirious. Mama's there to like calm her down. And then in the morning, they're feeling a little better, but they have red spots on their face and body, I think. But that sounds fun. Little blotchy spots all over them. They were very red.
Very, yeah.
And then this is such a sweet thing. Charlie comes to the door to see if there's anything he can do to help. And he's worried about Mama and how much she has to do and like if she's going to be able to handle it. And he brings them a little gift, which is like two blackboards with some chalk and erasers. And then about 4 days later, the girls start feeling better. And Mama announces like, well, tonight is the beginning of Passover, which they call Seder. Mm-hmm. Is that like, do you know about that? Is that like the night?
I looked it up just to make sure. So that one is just, it's one or two nights depending on where you live. Because I guess in Israel, they celebrate Passover for 7 days. And in America, well, in the diaspora and other places where Jewish people live, Jews traditionally observe one Seder day if in Israel and two if in the Jewish diaspora. And that's when they retell the story of the liberation of the children of Israel from Egypt.
Yeah, it sounded like it was like just a couple nights of Passover or one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So
right.
So Mama has managed to get everything ready, even though the girls had been sick. And even the grocer had left them special Passover foods outside their door. That was very sweet of him.
Yeah.
So that afternoon, Gertie and Charlotte start acting very strange. You know, that happens now. It's like you're watching your kids and you're like, okay, they're acting kind of funny. And then they get sick and you're like, oh. Yeah. That's what was going on. Like they were very quiet.
And poor Mama, up to this point, she had not slept at all because little Sarah, she's like fine during the day. And then during the night, she has these delirious fever dreams. Yes. And so Mama's up all night with her. And so now the two little girls are sick. And you can just imagine Mama going, oh my gosh.
You just totally reminded me about my dream last night. So it's crazy. I was trying to destroy Frankenstein. It just came back to me. And the whole night I was wrestling him.
Wow.
Figure out how to kill him. I know. Lovely, right?
Did you figure anything out?
No. I woke up, I think. But like,
that's kind of awful. That's a very stressful dream.
Yes. And I was trying to figure out once I did kill him, what was I going to do with him? That's very morbid and like strange.
Wow.
Anyway, so Gertie, they'd been acting strange and Mama hadn't really noticed because she'd been so busy. But one of them says they have a sore throat. The other one says they feel funny and that they're tired. So the doctor comes back. And of course, the two of them are sick too. And so Henny is upset because she's the only one that isn't sick. So she's going to be bored because all the other girls are in the sick room and she's going to be, which I was looking at like the picture of them later at the dinner. And I'm like, You never get to have your parents to yourself. Like, I just think that would be kind of funny, but that's not what she's upset anyways. The dinner table that night is set for just the three of them. And it sounded like maybe they would normally have guests, even other people come in, but like, not when they're quarantined. It just talks about how they have special food. I'm not going to go into that because it's a lot. And that Mama and Papa sit on special chairs because they get to dine as king and queen that night. And then they have these books called Haggadahs, maybe, which tell the story of the Passover. And Papa like intones it, which must means he kind of like chants it, kind of a sing song thing. In these books, Mama has ones that are in Hebrew and English so the girls can understand them. And they like to look through the pictures in these little books. And like normally, I guess they must not have enough, but because Henny's the only one out there, she's make sure she has a book. Papa wears special clothes. So he wears ceremonial clothes. And so he goes over to the door to make sure the girls can see him, how he's dressed before he goes back over to the table. And then they decide that they're going to leave the door open so that they can hear what Papa says, which also to me means their life is very, very boring.
But also, this is very special and something they look forward to every year. So I love that's something that they are attuned to. That
yes,
even though, and it sounds like he goes on for a long time. I don't know everything that's in the Haggadahs. I hope I didn't totally butcher that word, but it sounds like it's very lengthy. But they really listen for a long time because this is something that's really part of who they are and their heritage. Yeah. And so I think that they do have a love for it and appreciation, even when they're young children.
Yeah, they probably recognize what he's saying. And one cute thing they do is that Papa hides a piece of matzah. Whichever child discovers it without Papa knowing gets to pick whatever gift they want, which is crazy to me. And usually it's hard for him to figure out who it was that found it, but it's not going to be hard tonight because it's just Henny.
There's one option.
Later, they call it Afkaman, maybe. When it was time to discover who took the Afkaman, Gertie calls out from the bedroom that it was supposed to be her turn this year. Like, this isn't fair. I've never gotten to find it. And so Henny gets Father to agree that both of them are going to get a gift. And he does agree. So at the end of the night, then they leave the door open so that the prophet Elijah can come in. They pour him a glass of wine, and it's said that he visits every home that leaves the door open for him on Seder night. And the girls always watch for him to come, and they never see him. It's kind of like Santa Claus, I guess. But they swear that the wine glass looks lower later in the night than when they had poured it. Henny never gets sick. So the doctor just determines that she's not susceptible to the disease. Also, they just talk about how every afternoon somebody had come to the window to talk to Mama, and Charlie visits every few days and he always brings gifts for the girls. And then Miss Allen, the library lady, even sends him a package with a brand new St. Nicholas magazine. This book is like so homey and so like sweet and
Yes. And it's full of people looking out for and taking care of each other. And there's just such a sense of community and family and family beyond just your blood family. And it's so good. It's something to definitely aspire to, I think. And especially, again, this is not fantastical. Like, Sydney Taylor is writing from her memory.
Yeah.
So and things that happened in her life. So she didn't have to write it this way. I did want to talk about the food just for a second, just because everything is so symbolic and the Jewish customs are so beautiful and interesting. And so even the way that they lay out their plates and the food that they specifically choose, every item of food for their Passover feast is very symbolic. They have these three pieces of matzah, which stand for unity, for all Jews should be brotherly. I kind of imagine it just because one time we had this scripture study group many years ago, and we were talking about the Passover when the children of Israel lived in Egypt. So the actual like original one. And so this lady had studied in Jerusalem for quite some time. And she'd had a professor that had taught them and like shown them these plates of food, how it was all laid out. And then she had like specific recipes. So she like remade the feast. And so she had it right there for us. So we got to taste everything. It was really cool. And hopefully that's not like disrespectful or anything to do it not on Passover. I don't know. A lamb shank bone. There's a roasted egg, symbols of the sacrifices offered up by the Jews in ancient times. In the center of the plate was the horseradish, which was the bitter herbs for them to remember the bitterness of slavery. There's a mixture of ground nuts, apple, and wine to resemble the clay and bricks, which the Jews had to make over and over and over again for the Pharaoh. And then they've got a sprig of parsley, which later they'll take and they'll dip into salt water to represent. So the parsley itself is a symbol of springtime, but they dip it into salt water to represent the salty tears of the Jews when they were in slavery. Anyway, so I think it's really cool. And I will say that the apple and walnut, she didn't have wine in it, of course. I don't remember how she like held it all together, but it was actually kind of tasty.
Do we, as Christians, I guess, have any food that is like a symbolic or, I mean, I guess the sacrament?
Yeah. I mean, there's the symbolic, which is very, the sacrament, which is very much a ritual and extremely symbolic. We specifically are not Catholic, but within the Catholic Church, there are a lot of symbolic foods. Like for Easter, there's the hot cross buns, you know, or there's like a lot of times we do ham at Easter, and I don't know exactly why, but there's food that is traditional. I don't know that it's as deeply symbolic as what Jews have, but I think we definitely have our traditional foods.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking is that we do traditional, like obviously turkey at Thanksgiving and ham at Easter is what we usually do. Christmas is like, can go either way.
Yeah, for sure.
Some people probably do ham. Some people probably do turkey. I don't know what we usually do. We could probably go back and forth, but
yeah, we do have candy canes that are symbolic.
That's true. I mean, there's lots of symbols at Christmas, but like, this is just really interesting. And like, I just think like the egg and these foods probably were tasty, but don't sound like it. I don't know.
Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily sound like a massive feast, but it's just everything has a very specific reason.
They're very ritualistic. Very.
Yeah.
I don't believe that we really have tons of rituals in our home. We do things
like quite
sometimes.
The same. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, I thought it was really interesting. I almost was like getting ready to put that in. And then I was like, this is really getting long.
So 4th of July, we'll go quickly through this one because it's super fun, but there's not like a ton to it. So yeah. We've jumped forward because Passover is in spring and now we're in summer, the 4th of July. Ella is making, she's grating potatoes. Most of the kids know it's a holiday because Papa is home. They're like, it's not Sabbath. And they find out it's Independence Day. It's 4th of July. So Ella is grating potatoes to make a potato kugel, which is like a potato pudding cake thing. It sounds really good. Mama's like, well, Charlie's coming, so we need to make it extra large. And Ella, like her hand had been aching, her arm had been aching from all the grating potatoes. She's like, oh, Charlie's coming. Like, I will grate many more potatoes.
Yeah, then she's like, do I have time
and
to do my hair again?
Yes. I thought that was so cute. I'll have to hurry if I want to do my hair again. He comes and he has a little surprise for the girls. And so they all go outside and he has brought some fireworks for them. And they love it. And so they set off the fireworks and it's super fun. But as they're doing it, Charlie talks about, I mean, he tells them they need to be careful because they can burn themselves if they're not really careful. So he shows them how to do that. But how does he know? Because he dives into his childhood a little bit. And his childhood up to this point is a mystery. Nobody really knows like where he's from. He talks about how he was just a little boy and he'd held a firecracker in his hand and it exploded in his hand and burned him pretty badly. And so he ran to his mother and his mother comforted him and things. And as he's telling them that, he gets just this very far away kind of sad look in his eyes. And they kind of bring him back to earth. So he's sort of back with them, but they get this little glimpse. So they have fun with the firecrackers. Then they go in for their meal. Love the potato kugel. Sounds like it's delicious. And then we get a little more. Okay. So Mama says, when you get married, Charlie, you send your wife to me and I'll give her the recipe for the potato kugel.
Because it's like his favorite food.
Yeah. And he doesn't actually want to share, but of course he does. And so Charlie says, I will if I ever have a wife. Somehow Mama must have said the wrong thing, for the laughter had gone from Charlie's face. Ella twisted the napkin in her hands and looked at him unhappily. There was an awkward silence. Fortunately, it's broken because fire engines go past. It turns out that there's like been these bonfires lit. 4th of July is, it can be as much of a disaster back then as it can be today. Like, you just never know. All the firemen are on high alert. I didn't totally understand this part. Mama says that she doesn't like the sound of the fire engines because it means the bonfires have started already. And Papa says the tar on the streets melts and the cobblestones get loose. Then the city has a job to repair the damage. I don't totally understand that. I don't know if people are just like randomly lighting bonfires on the streets and then destroying the streets or what. Charlie busts out another surprise. He has a Roman candle. And so he takes everybody outside and he actually entertains the entire neighborhood with this big old Roman candle. And it's super fun. And the girls say that they're so proud because it's their Charlie who's providing this entertainment for everybody. And after everybody goes upstairs, Papa and Charlie sit and talk on the front steps for a long time. And so Papa finally is able to get a lot more of Charlie's story. And so he goes up and he talks to Mama and Ella is awake. And so this is what she overhears. Says, it seems that Charlie quarreled with his parents about a girl he wanted to marry. They wanted him to marry another girl. Charlie's girl learned that his parents opposed their marriage and she just went away. Charlie looked for her everywhere he could think of, but he couldn't find a trace of her. She was an orphan and he didn't know any of her people. And they also find out that his whole name is actually Herbert Charles Graham. He had come to the east side of New York because it was so different from his life. And he loved the people and he didn't really want anything to do with his old life. So all this story just made Ella's heart so heavy. First of all, she's so sad for Charlie and his sadness and his lost love. And then her heart is also heavy because he did have a lost love. Like, he did have a sweetheart. Said she knew that Charlie was not really her Charlie. His heart belonged to somebody else.
I mean, when you're 12 and you're just like, ah, oh. As if he's going to go through life. He's probably like 30 or something, as if he's going to go through life without having a sweetheart. And she's just like, yeah, he didn't. He'd be in denial. I did look up the potato p- p- pudding thing. And I thought that was an interesting word for it. Pudding. I looked up some recipes and it looked like kind of like hash browns that they might make like for breakfast at a restaurant, like crunchy on the outside, kind of soft on the inside. And it's like grated potatoes. So interesting.
Yeah. Is it more like a potato pancake then? Have you done potato pancakes before?
Yes. Well, I was looking up with this lady, but she said that she used to use something and then she started using potato starch like she does in the potato pancakes and it worked better to hold it together. So I think it's similar, but it's probably more like a, I don't know, potato pancakes are like shaped like pancakes, right? This is kind of like thick, I think, and kind of like a, maybe like a casserole dish.
Interesting.
It just looked really yummy. I was like,
oh, yeah, may good. Have to try it.
And then it just, I have lots of anxiety around fireworks. So it just kind of brought that all back. Like, ooh, Roman candles. I don't like stuff that shoots up in the air.
Or just that shoots. I know. It always makes me nervous. I remember when I was a teenager, I went to Bear Lake with my friend and her cousin and his friends were there. And it was over the 4th of July. And so we went out to the beach and they just like started shooting off these mortars and stuff. And some of them fell over and shot the wrong way and came over like right towards us. We had to leap out of the way. It's like, oh my gosh. And also I am terrified of anything that is illegal because I'm like, people can do things that are illegal all day long and get away with it. I cannot. I will get in trouble, even if I'm not actually like directly involved in it. And so I was just panicking the whole time. I'm like, the police are going to show up. We're all going to get in trouble. And I'm 18 and I'm going to be in like the most trouble. So even though I wasn't even touching the mortars, I was like,
I know. That's my other thing. We must be similar. I have anxiety about like fire and it shooting at us. And then I have anxiety about like the police coming because we have illegal fireworks. And
yeah.
And now like in Eugene, you were supposed to be able to do fireworks on the 3rd and 4th, 5th, like for those 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then because of fire danger, they said no, but we did them anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just frustrating.
Or you just go out to Harrisburg. You can do them all day long.
Right. Okay. So chapter 11 is family outing. This is another one that gave me anxiety because who likes losing children?
Everyone can relate to any mom can relate to this. Yes. Oh my gosh.
And a couple of reasons. One, it had been unbearably hot for more than a week. And I can only imagine they're upstairs. They're in the city with all these buildings around. It's unbearably hot. So the bedrooms in the houses are miserable. And so most people would take their mattresses out onto the fire escape. But their family just put their mattresses out in the front room. And that was like not much better.
Yeah.
And so mama decides that the girls need to get away from the city, even if it's just for a day, which I thought was funny that Papa didn't go, but he's just so busy with work. They decide to go to the beach. They ride a streetcar out to the beach. And while on the streetcar, it's so cute that Ella asks about Charlie, who had seemed quite depressed lately. She dreamed about one day when Charlie would be on a streetcar just like this and a beautiful lady would walk on and then her life would be over. That lady, of course, would like him and it would be a sad day for her. So they arrive. They're going to Coney Island. And when they get there, they all change into their bathing suits. And it's hard to find a spot on the beach because everybody else has the exact same idea to get away from the heat, which it sounds like it's like here where it could be 100 degrees where we live, which is like 65 miles in from the coast. But on the coast, it could be 20 degrees cooler. And so it sounded like it was like that. It was much cooler there. The water is even cold. It's so cute. They all hold hands. All five of the girls hold hands and they go in the water together, just like get it over with. At lunchtime, she has a hard time getting them to come out of the water to come eat lunch. But she does. The girls have simple food. Now, this is hilarious. Girls have all this simple food like bread and butter and stuff. But mama has a Limburger sandwich. Do you know what Limburger cheese is?
No.
Okay. I don't either because I've never had it and I've never smelt it. Gross. But my mom has always told me this story of like my parents went into a movie theater once and a lady came in with a Limburger cheese sandwich and like started eating it. And it was like the most horrible smell you can imagine. So apparently the cheese smells awful. So what was funny is my mom has told me that story for years and years. It said in the book, the children found it hard to believe that the sandwich tasted better than it smelled. So
there it is. Yeah, be right. That is so funny. So did you look it up? Like, is that
cheese
the name of the cheese?
Yeah. And it just smells awful. So the funny story, this is another funny story. I went to just 2 days ago. I was at the doctor's office, not the doctor's office, the like lab to get some blood drawn. A guy comes in. It's like next to Taco Bell, this lab, right? You've been
okay.
Here. And the guy brings in Taco Bell and he like opens it up in the waiting area and starts eating Taco Bell. And I'm like, that did not smell good. This is not the place to bring Taco Bell into, right? So he eats his Taco Bell, throws the thing away, and then he sits down in the chair next to me, starts brushing his teeth.
Oh my gosh.
In the waiting area. And I was like, okay.
Get any weirder?
No.
That's so funny.
Never happened to me before. And I'm like, you know, there's a bathroom over there. Like, if you need to brush your teeth, why don't you go do it in the bathroom?
Welcome to Eugene. That is so funny. I looked up Limburger sandwiches just so, because apparently it's still served in Wisconsin.
Ew.
And so it's a sandwich based on the odorous cheese, which was a staple of working class immigrants and their families throughout the United States. It's served on rye bread, spread on or place a small piece of Limburger, which is the cheese, and you had a thick slice of onion, mustard, salt, and pepper.
Gross.
Right?
It's like eating like a salami, not salami. What is that meat that's super gross? Bologna sandwich.
Ugh. Oh, yeah.
So yeah, that's my story about Limburger cheeses. The only time in my life I've ever heard of it is from my mom.
So never heard of it. So that is so funny that you already kind of had an idea about it.
I did. When I read that, I went, oh, Limburger. And maybe when we read this book as kids, that's when my mom told me that story. I don't know.
Maybe so.
The next funny thing is mama won't let them get into the water for an hour. So I'm like, did she believe the whole, like, I don't know, if you, when you were a kid, there was the story that
could
swim for an hour after you ate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was kind of funny. What, she thought they were going to sink to the bottom if that food needed to digest?
Especially if they were just like, because they weren't like hardcore swimming. They were just like splashing in the waves.
Yes. It's very funny. So they, for the next hour, they play in the sand and then they convince her to take them to Playland or the boardwalk, which sounds awful because they just, there's all this stuff to buy and do there and they don't do or buy anything. They just go to look, which is exciting enough for them. It talks about seeing a big scenic railway. Do you think that was a roller coaster?
I think so, because it says it's dizzying up and down hills, circling round and round ever higher and higher up in the sky.
Yeah.
Sounds like a roller coaster.
Yeah. Mama says it's too dangerous. They look at it and they, and some of the girls are like, do you think you'd go on that? No. And mama's like, nope, it's too dangerous. We're not doing it. They kind of walk through the boardwalk very slowly, looking at everything. They watch the merry-go-round. They see the tent. Now, this is also funny. They see the tent with the tallest man, the bearded lady. Mm-hmm. And the book references them as freaks. And they call it the freak show.
Yeah.
Which we probably wouldn't say now. Who knows if they even, that's not a thing anymore. But, and then they actually see the bearded lady whose beard is longer than Uncle Schloiman's. While they're looking at the Ferris wheel, Mama notices that Henny is missing. She tells the girls to stay put while she goes and looks for Henny. I love the end of this chapter. I thought it was so cute. She comes back having not found her. And you know how it is when you're like, think your child is missing. And you're somewhere like that where there's like tons of people. Where do you even start to look?
Where do you even start? Yeah.
It's just so scary. So she comes back, had not found her. Ella says, okay, you stay here, Mama. I'll go look for her. So she goes back to the tent where the strange people were being showcased.
Yeah.
And even though she isn't there, someone suggests that she go to the police because that's usually where they take the lost children. So Ella goes back to her mom and sisters, and then they head to the police station. And I just, so cute. They find her there. They see a policeman. He takes them in. She's sitting on a bench. She's eating a chocolate ice cream cone. She's got a candy bar and a lollipop in her lap. She doesn't seem one bit worried. She's sitting there having the time of her life.
Yeah, living the good life.
Yes. And so what happened is she'd been so interested in the show where they had the bearded lady and the tallest man and stuff that she hadn't noticed when the rest of them had left. And when she did realize that she was lost, she'd seen a policeman and she just came up to him and said, I'm lost. No tears. And he's like, okay, well, I'll take you to the place where moms usually look for their children. And on the way, he bought her the chocolate bar and ice cream. And then the captain of the police station offered all the kids there, because clearly there were plenty of children that were lost, ice cream cones. And she's the only one that's not so upset by being lost that she takes the ice cream cone.
Which, the plucky little girl.
To me, shows like mama's kids are like, well adjusted.
Well adjusted and very secure in the fact they're like, she's like, they're going to find me.
Yeah.
Now, she didn't think about the extreme panic she would have caused, but there wasn't a lot she could do about that. She's like, this is what I can do.
Well, and also she didn't run off. Like, they left her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just so cute. So she wasn't the only one. She was the only one that wasn't crying. So she's the only one that got ice cream. And I think it said, like, I sure wish the other kids would have gotten ice cream so I could have eaten theirs when I was done with mine.
Just give them to me.
Yeah. She's like, why are you guys giving up this opportunity for ice cream? And, you know, anyway, so at the end, they, you know, they go home on the streetcar and Papa was waiting for them, but he had been really worried because they had taken so much longer than they were supposed to. And when they told him what happened, he said to Mama, what a time you must have had.
Poor lady. Oh my gosh. Okay. So have you ever lost a child in a crowd?
I mean, I want to say yes. I've lost children in my house. Okay. You know, like.
Didn't you lose Presley one time? Was it one of your kids that, and they ended up being asleep on their bed? And you
One time we lost Audrey and she was locked in our Suburban for a long time.
Oh,
it was bad. Scary. And I'm pretty sure she has like trauma from it, but she was the kind of kid that like, it was normal for us not to see her because she'd go in her room and play by herself for like ever. Right. And so we had come home and I don't remember how old she was, but she couldn't get the door open to the Suburban. And we thought that she was in her room playing. And so when it was time for dinner and we called everybody to dinner and she didn't come, and we're like, we searched the whole house. That was a traumatic day for all of us.
Yes, I would say so. Holy moly. That,
awful. Terrible. But I can't remember like a specific time in a crowd, but I'm sure it has happened. Have you?
Yes. So it was actually at Disneyland, which is like the worst. I had three little kids and I was pregnant. And so the kids that I had, they were about to turn 6, 4, and 2, but at the time they were 5, 3, and 1. Okay. So Ken was in line so that they could meet Pluto, I think. So he was keeping their place in line, but all the kids needed a drink of water. So I was like, okay, let's go get a drink of water from the drinking fountain. So I'm holding Matthew, my 1-year-old, in my arms. And of course, like I said, I'm pregnant too. So I was belly. So I told Tate and Addie, little 5 and 3-year-old, to just put their hands in my pockets so I could feel them and they had something to hold on to, you know? And so we did it that way. So we made it to the drinking fountain and then we're making our way back. And all of a sudden I'm like, I don't feel Addie anymore. And like, you know, I'm holding a baby. So I don't have full range of vision all the time. So I had to keep swiveling, but I look over and she's gone. And I was like, oh my God. And I start looking around the crowd and I'm like, I could totally feel exactly what Mama is feeling here. I'm like, where do I even start? It was absolutely terrifying. Panic just ensues. And so I'm like, well, we'll get back to the line where Dad is standing in line to see Pluto because I can give these kids to him and then go search for her. I'm just absolutely terrified. So we get back to the line and she's standing there with Ken. And this was quite a bit of distance. Like, it was quite a long ways. She knew where she was going and she just like took off and ran and went and stood in line with him.
Yes. When you see them and you're just like, oh my gosh, this could have ended so much worse.
Yes, totally. So I guess she wasn't really lost, but I momentarily thought that she was. Chapter 12 is called Sukkos. I don't know if I'm saying that right. They have a lot of holidays and I think it's kind of awesome. So they come through Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. So Rosh Hashanah is the Jewish New Year. Yom Kippur is the Day of Atonement. And even Sarah's like, my goodness, the Jewish holidays certainly come in bunches. And they do. So now is it Sukkah? The way to say the little house they build is Sukkah, looks like. We're going to say it's Sukkos. That's how I'm going to say it. Sukkos is a Thanksgiving for the harvest lasting 9 days. A part of each of these days is spent in a specially built wooden hut, which is known as a Sukkah. In a lot of places, there's just like one built for an entire congregation, but they have this little backyard. And so they build their own little hut. And this year they're going to do it. And Papa's going to build it and the girls are going to help him. And it's really cute. So over the next several days, they work on it and they work on this little hut. It's amazing how quickly a tiny wooden house could be put together when everybody helped. So at the supper table one night, Sarah says, "Hey, I would like to invite the library lady to the Suco we're building." And she said that she's never seen one in her entire life. So I wanted to, you know, have her come see it. And so mom was like, yeah, invite her. Make sure she knows that your mama and papa like want her to come, which is how all things are with children. You're like, okay, that's wonderful that you're inviting me. I need to know that your parents are involved in this. So Sarah comes home and she's like, she's going to come. And so they finish the little house. It's done, but there's no roof. And then we find out that what they do is they take branches and spread over it as the roof, because it'll be the loveliest ceiling anyone could possibly want, sparse enough so that the sun can shine through in the daytime and the stars peep in at night. So it's kind of cute. And they decide that they're going to leave the little house up for a month after it's done. And so this is like September, October. So, you know, it's getting to be fall and kind of cold, but they'll get to play in it for a month. And they're really excited about that. And then once it's pretty much done, then it's turned over to Ella to decorate it. And so she's the one in charge of decorating it every year. And so the girls help her. They cut different fruits from cardboard and color them. They make strings of colored paper chains and create paper flowers. And then Charlie comes over. He helps them hang up the decorations and everything. Then the library lady comes. This is really cute. So Sarah skipped out joyously because she's there. And Papa's like, well, you better go grab her because she probably doesn't know how to get to the backyard. So she comes back leading the smiling Miss Allen by the hand. Suddenly, Miss Allen stopped. Her laughter stopped too. Her face grew pale and her eyes grew big. The children looked at her in astonishment, and then their gaze followed hers straight across the yard to Charlie. Herbert, the library lady whispered. The children knew something was happening, something big. They could feel it. They looked at Mama to see if she understood, but Mama was just as surprised as they were, and so was Papa. Charlie, sorry, I'm reading a lot because this is so cute. Charlie, too, seemed to have forgotten where he was. He walked towards the library lady. The yard was still. It was almost as if these two were the only ones alive in it. He took the girl's hands in both of his. "Kathy, Kathy," he said brokenly, "I had begun to believe you were dead. So she is the long lost love." And they come back together and it's so cute. And it says that he encircles her face with his hands and gives her a kiss. And they're just like so happy to see each other. And Charlie says, "I'm so grateful for this family because they brought us together, you know, like totally unknowingly, but it just works out because they're such a wonderful family." But Kathy and Charlie leave. Papa goes to synagogue and they talk about how Kathy wanted to go right to Charlie's parents and like mend bridges. And so, as far as we know, things end up happily for them. And then they start handing food into the little suka, and they eat in there. And yeah, that kind of ends the evening. So
I loved what you read there just because I thought that was a really good example of her writing. Because I do think she writes in a very sweet, I really like her style.
I do too.
I mean, it's kind of like, say, Little House on the Prairie, like kind of like that idea that she's telling about her childhood. But like, this writing is so good. I don't know. Yeah, I think it's better.
In a way it is. It's, yeah, I agree. Yeah. So because she tells a lot of story in such a very concise way.
Of course, Ella, she's probably upset about the situation. But like, if it had to be anybody, probably so happy that it's a library lady.
Yeah. Yeah. They all love her.
When things like that happen, and it makes me think, I'm sure that did happen in real life. I'm sure that was part of their.
Probably. I know. It's just, it's great.
But like when things like that happen, it's just such a miracle.
I know. Love it.
One last lady. Yeah, I love it. Okay. So the last chapter is called A New Charlie. So Charlie left. Now we have a new one. The experience of the father and how she portrays his feelings about what's about to happen. So my family had three girls. My parents had three girls and then a boy. And so like, you know, when that boy was born, it was just the most exciting thing ever. Right. Or, you know, think about like, we have a friend who had five boys and then they had two girls. And it's like, you think by the fifth boy, like, okay. And they say that a lot in this story, like, well, mama just has hers.
Yeah. I know. It's not going to be a him. No. All she has is hers.
Yeah. And then at the end, they're like, He looks very different. I mean, it's very strange to have a baby in our house wearing boy clothes.
Yeah. They
That's
suddenly
all.
realize all the ramifications of this
Yes.
different little being. So,
And that's how it was in my family too. When my little brother was born, it was like, this is weird. This is very strange. It's after 10 o'clock at night and everybody's still awake. And mama's bed has been moved to the front room and the doors are closed so the girls can't see her. And papa's pacing in the kitchen. And they said Tanta was there. They have all of these people in their life named Tanta, but they always like say which Tanta it is, which must it's aunt.
It's aunt, yeah.
Tanta Rivka and some other names, right? But this woman was just Tanta. She was like the aunt. And she's a widowed sister, mama's widowed sister, who would be there whenever mama needed her. Both of my sisters are amazing, but one of them does not have children. I mean, the other one has children, one does not. And this reminded me of her. Like,
how cute.
She's there. If we need to go away, she comes and stays with the kids, you know. I mean, she's just there for us no matter what.
Yeah.
Katie is in Utah this weekend, and my sister, Katie drove up to her house, and my sister took her to the airport, and then she's going to go pick her up on Monday. And what's so cute is Katie called me yesterday, and she goes, Emily Venmo'd me $100 and said, have fun.
Oh my gosh, that is so sweet.
I know. Like, my sister will do anything for my kids, yeah. And it's just wonderful. So that just reminded me of her. Also, the doctor is there and he's resting in the far bedroom because he thinks it's not going to be time yet. So I'm going to just go through this really fast because basically she has a baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
The girls are having a hard time sleeping. And then I talked about how they talked about, like, she just has girls. So they're just expecting another girl. Gertie's upset because she's worried about not being the baby anymore. She's been the baby for 5 years and they're having a hard time sleeping. But finally, the three younger ones fall asleep. But Ella and Sarah overhear a conversation between their father and Tanta. The aunt says, why don't you lie down on the couch a while? You've been through this often enough not to be so impatient. You don't even have to worry about what it'll be. You know, it'll be another girl. I know, Papa answered. I know, but there's always that hope. Maybe this time it'll be a son to carry on my name, to go to the synagogue with me. Oh, what's the use even thinking about it? It's sure to be another daughter. I'll do as you say. I'll lie down for a minute. So he's also expecting a girl. And that's when they realize how much he actually wants a boy. I mean, as a girl, when my dad finally had a boy, we understood. We knew.
Yeah, I think so.
Then Ella wakes up kind of in the middle of the night, and Papa and her find out together that it was a boy. And Papa cries. He's like a sobbing, heaving cry, you know. She's never seen that before. And so that sticks out to her. So, yes, yeah, so sweet. I mean, can you imagine? He's just like, oh, she's like, my dreams just came true. So they make her go back to bed and they won't let her wake up the other ones because he's like, if you wake up those girls, nobody's going to get any sleep. In the morning, all the girls go and meet the new baby. They're soon shooed out of the room because mama needs to rest. And they asked their dad what they are thinking about naming the baby. And he says he's thinking about Chaim after his grandfather. So there will be a new Charlie in their life. And
I think just because I've read The Chosen, yeah. I think it's Chaim.
Chaim.
Yeah.
Which is nothing like Charlie.
No, but maybe just because of the CH. But I'm pretty sure they say it Chaim.
Well, that's good because I didn't know how to say that. I've read The Chosen too, but I read it, so I didn't know how to say it. Anyways, and that's what I thought of when I saw that name was The Chosen.
I know. Chaim Potok.
Chaim. Okay. So now I felt like a dummy, but I would have thought Charlie. Anyways, Chaim. That's much better. Okay. So now they have a new Charlie. And again, they comment that it's weird to see a baby with boy clothes on in their family. And then Ella mentions that they are no longer an all-of-a-kind family. And I love Mama's response. She says, it's like we're more all-of-a-kind family now. It means that we're all close and loving and loyal, and our family will always be that. Such a sweet ending.
I so love sweet. It. So
I just
much.
Love this book. That's it. So there's three girls and a boy in my family. And then my children, I had the boy first and then girls. Mm-hmm. And we were just like, yep, we're just having girls now. And how, like, your family's a little bit back and forth, but your siblings, were they like mostly girls, boys? Like,
yeah, it's kind of funny because I was just thinking about both sides of my family, like my mom's side, my dad's side, everybody's very mixed. I don't think it's heavy on one or the other. So in my immediate family, there's four girls and two boys, but it was like boy, girl, girl, boy, girl, girl.
Totally mixed in.
Yeah. And then my, you know, my children, it's three girls, three boys. And it was very much, it was, we go girl, boy, boy, girl, girl, boy. And yeah, like, I think all my cousins, very similar, just very mixed. And there was, I guess in my aunt's family, they did three boys and a girl, one boy, one girl. Anyway.
It's still pretty mixed. I mean, in our family, like, it's totally the opposite. So I have a boy and all girls. My sister has a boy and all girls. My mom has a boy and all girls. My brother so far has two girls. They were very girl heavy. And then David's family, it's the other way around. So like there was a girl and all boys, and then his sister has a girl and seven boys. And so
wow,
the opposite.
In my dad's family, he has six kids, but then his siblings, his older sister just has two kids, a boy and a girl. His younger brother has two kids, a boy and a girl. It's crazy, huh? And then in Ken's family, it's, they just have him and his sister. His aunt and uncle, they did have five boys and then one girl. So I guess there is that.
I mean, can you imagine like the luck? Like you're like, just keep having kids and it's like, boy, 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 boy. It's supposed to be a 50-50 chance every time. I know. You know, it'd be like flipping a coin and getting like tails 19 times in a row or something.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
How many books do you have that are similar to this?
Okay. Just a few, because the ones that I thought of, like we've kind of already talked about some of them, but sort of the autobiographical or just like thinking back to that time. So I did think of Laura Ingalls Wilder and Little House on the Prairie and that whole series, which are super cute and fun. And I love them. In recent years, they've become a little bit controversial, but I'm like, she was just writing her history. So love it or hate it, it's her history.
Well, and there's a lot that we can learn from this book.
Oh, absolutely. There is because we're over 100 years later. In Laura's case, we're like 160 years later. So there, things are different. Times are different, but how important to read about that time and learn from both the good and the bad. She's just writing what's true.
My mom, we were brainstorming yesterday and she said Little House on the Prairie. I was like, no. Yeah, it works. I thought of Cheaper by the Dozen by Frank Ernestine Gilbreth, which I thought was interesting because they're brother and sister. So they were writing about their family as, you know, their immediate family. And I love that book. I love that all the movies that have been made. I love the idea of big families, like,
yes,
and learning about how they work.
Now, the modern movies are like the book in name only.
Right.
They are nothing like the book, but I think that they made an old movie, didn't they?
Yeah, there's a really old one.
That is actually based on, I loved the book too so much. I was very inspired by it, especially their dad is like an efficiency expert. And that's so cool. I wish that could be a thing today. I would totally be an efficiency expert. Like that's what I would study and go to school to be, is an efficiency expert.
You would have to be with 12 kids.
I know.
The other movie I was thinking of that I loved was Yours, Mine, and Ours from, Lucille Ball is in
Lucille
it.
Ball. Yeah.
I love that movie. And the dad in that movie is kind of an efficiency expert. Like he's in the
military guy. Yeah.
And so like, I remember that movie when
Henry Fonda, right? Is it Henry Fonda? I think so.
He posts that chart of how the kids are going to use the bathroom and like he color codes their sheets or whatever. It's so cute.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really funny. It's cute. I feel like I talk about these books all the time, but it also made me think of The Moffats by Eleanor Estes. And she's got a bunch. It's, you know, The Moffats, The Moffat Museum, The Middle Moffat, Rufus M. I think that might be all of them. But the thing is, they're set in a very similar time. All of a Kind Family is in New York. It's kind of a made up town, but it's based on New Haven, Connecticut. And they are in Connecticut, but I think she calls it Cranberry. And they go to the coast, they ride the streetcar. They're just this sweet family and their little adventures. And so it really reminded me of that.
Should we do that? Because you want to do an Eleanor Estes next year, right?
Have we not put that on? Yes. Yeah. Let's put that on the list. Let's do.
I think that would be fun.
We could even just do the Moffats. That would be a good one to start with.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by her. Like, I've never read anything by her before. So my next one, have you ever read Five Little Peppers and How They Grew?
And that's another one that it reminded me of.
You tell about it then.
It's one that I actually found a copy of it that was over 100 years old. It was awesome. Anyway, I showed it to my grandma and she was like, I loved that book. Anyway, so it's set quite a bit earlier than this. It's like still the 1800s, but it's just this little family. It's the Pepper family. Their mom is a widow and it's just their sweet little adventures. They're just the kindest kids. They're just always working together. They're very poor, but they make friends with this guy who, and his, I think his son, or it's been many years since I read it with kids, but make friends with this other little boy, and they're quite wealthy, so they kind of help take care of this little family, and they work hard, they take, like I said, they take care of each other. They're just such a good and sweet family, and they're always looking to do things for their mom, and she's always looking to do things for them, and yeah, so it's very sweet.
I would love to know how many books you've read, because it's got to be in like the tens of thousands.
Oh, I don't think so, but I don't know.
I'm just so impressed. The one, and then I want you to, well, we've talked about this on the podcast several times. I thought about the Penderwicks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one too.
Yeah. We've talked about that a lot. So
yeah. And you have read that one or you have not?
I haven't.
Okay.
I read it to Presley and she was like, no, she's very opinionated about what we read, but it's by, is it Jean Birdsall? Nope. That's all. That's what I had. So
yeah. And that one's really cute too. It's it's a bunch of girls that they go live in this area just for the sort of, like, it reminds me of like an Airbnb type of thing, but there's like this whole yard and everything, and their dad's working on writing, and they make friends with this little boy who's there, and they just have all these adventures during the summer. It's more modern, but
yeah,
it's really cute. It's very sweet. Another one that I think could also fall into it is, because again, it's sort of the time period, it's autobiographical, and I love it so much, is Little Britches by Ralph Moody. And so it's a little boy, and it's more, they're not in the city, they're farmers, ranchers, but he's talking all about his growing up and his family, and he has an incredible father, wonderful mother. They're just these really strong, good people, family oriented and very wise, and just all the things that he learns and the way he grows. And so that's also a really good one.
And then we talked earlier in this episode about The Hired Girl. And I think we mentioned it in the last episode too, about, like you said, a Gentile girl who is hired to work in a Jewish family. And that's just, I mean, if you want to know about the Jewish customs and how they get prepared, how they have to prepare for them and stuff, it's fascinating, I think. And there's a little bit of like a romance or like interest in it.
Very awkward, but...
Yes. So it's called The Hired Girl by Laura Amy Schlitz. And actually, it looks like if you have it on, if you have Amazon Prime or Audible, it's free. Probably means it's available on Hoopla too, because I think usually
they're the same.
But yeah, that was a very good book. I really enjoyed it.
It was. There were parts of it that, because it's, I believe it's a children's book, like it was recommended for this book club that our kids were a part of. And so we read it together. But there were parts of it that I was like, wait, this is for children? It seemed a little bit not children-ish.
Yeah.
But it was still really good. Just unexpected. I'm like reading it to my little kids and I'm like, so might skip over this part a little bit. So
cute. So I did come up with a book that I want to share. I am behind on my reading. Like you said a couple weeks ago, I've really been trying to like understand some things that are going on in the world. And so I've been listening to like a lot of podcasts, and I was listening to a podcast similar to ours about Frankenstein. And so that took several hours of my week.
Yeah.
But the book I thought of is called The Family Nobody Wanted by Helen Doss. And I'm not sure if I've talked about it at all on the podcast. I used to check, similar to this, All of a Kind Family, I used to check this book out at the library all the time. And I would read it and I would get like 50, 60, 70% done with it. And then I would have to take it back. And then I'd start again. Yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah.
The Family Nobody Wanted. As an adult, I finally checked it out and finished it. And so I loved it. But it was just about this lady and her husband who was like a preacher or a minister.
Okay.
And they can't have children. And so basically they just start adopting children that nobody wants. So it's like, I can't remember what time period it is, like early 1900s, right? Probably maybe 30s, 40s, maybe even the 50s. I'm not sure. But they adopt like children that are mixed race that nobody wants.
Yeah, especially at that time period. That was not done very much. So
they have this family of like all sorts of different nationalities. And like a lot of the kids are like the same age. And so she can't, like, basically the mom cannot say no when they come to her and they know that they'll take them. So they end up with 12 kids.
Wow. And
I loved it. I just loved hearing about like her trying to manage all these little babies at the same time. And like some of them had medical, you know, needs. And so she was like taking them into the doctor and like trying to explain why her kids all looked different as a character.
And that is a true story. It's based on wow, that's really cool.
It was really very sweet.
Yeah, I want to look at that one.
Helen Doss. It reminded me a little bit of this book. Like I kept thinking of it.
I don't know if I should admit this or not, but I decided to, the only reason that I even dug into it was because I heard this narrator was incredible. And so I started listening to Outlander. Have you read or listened to that?
No, but I'm shocked.
I don't know if this is edited or not, but like, that's what everybody's like, oh, it's so bad. Like I'm like halfway through. It's like 32 hours, this first book. I think the shows make it a lot more graphic than it actually is because it's not graphic.
That's good to know.
There's maybe like a couple of little things, but it's really like there's no language. They like allude to things more than actually talk about things. Does that make sense? Probably the battle things and stuff like that is maybe a little more graphic, but at least at this point, it's not. So I'll let you know if that changes. But yeah, like I said, I'm halfway through. It's 32 hours or like 33 hours.
So you're going to share it next week too.
Probably.
Is it interesting?
It is. Have you ever watched any of the episodes at all? So yeah, I don't know. I'm like, it's good. It's very historical. That's the other thing. It talks a lot about the history of Scotland and their politics and things like that. So it's not like, I don't know if everybody, maybe because of the shows, everybody has this idea that it's just this very like sex heavy book. It's not
good.
Not at all. So it's really a lot more about Scotland. So
interesting. Okay. Yeah. I liked hearing that. Like, that's great because I just assumed that because of the show, like, well, yeah, I'm not going to be interested in that. Or
I will say the one thing though, too, is that the author, like, she writes Jamie, you know, sort of the love interest in back in time in Scotland or whatever, as very much superhuman. And also, like, he's kind of too perfect. I think that that can definitely be a thing. I'm like, men don't do that. Like, you can have a really, really, really good man, but he's not quite like that. So in some ways, that's almost annoying. I'm like, she just wrote exactly what she thinks every woman wants in a man, but it's not really. So
too perfect.
Yeah, kind of too perfect.
I was just looking ahead here. So we're starting Mere Christianity next week. There, it's divided into four books. So I think that's perfect. What do you think?
Yeah.
I think that would go best with themes because each book has like a theme. So like the first book one is Right and Wrong as a Clue to the Meaning of the Universe. And so let's just go with that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And like, because like book two is like what Christians believe. So I think those would be really good breakup points. So next week, we're going to cover Mere Christianity book one.
Awesome. By C.S. Lewis.
Yes. I'm excited and scared. So.
I know. It's going to be heavy. It's going to be good, though.
Yeah. And it's a short book. So it looks like the last time I read it, I got to page 120. Like, it looks like
that's pretty good.
60% through. So I'm excited. And it'll be a good thing for Christmas time, I think. So next week, we're starting with that. We are so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis, Book 1. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share us with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out of the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.